I'm Jeannie Holzbacher, and on behalf of myself and my fabulous co-host, Jill Wright, we want to welcome you to Executive Shine, Conversations That Count. We search the planet to bring you some of the most dynamic leaders in various industries who often only have one thing in common: uncommonly outrageous positive impact on people and businesses. They are leaving this world a much better place. So kick back and join us. Grab a few insights you can immediately apply to leverage your leadership and foster greater connection in a world that's become increasingly disconnected. They so desperately need you to shine your light bright. Cheers. All right, we've got an exciting show tonight because the guest we have on here is the perpetual purveyor of hope, Dr. Stephanie Rimka. I am so excited, Jill, that you got her on, because I spent yesterday on your website and there's so much depth to who you are as a chiropractor and as a woman and what you do. So I want to dig right in a little bit. I want to tell people that you were the People's Choice Award in Atlanta as a chiropractor who does the most for mental health, and your expertise in brain and neurology and in helping people just live a more abundant life is unbelievable. Dr. Rimka, you are a buster of healthcare myths. So as we start off tonight, there's so much to you. What could you give our listeners, just one or two myths that if you could wave your magic wand, we're getting wrong over and over again?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. You guys, so you can tell it's not staged. I didn't know what you're going to say. So this is great. Overall, one or two myths that I think would have the biggest impact in healthcare. Is that basically?
Yes.
Wow, that's a tough one. So I'll start with, I guess, if I was writing this, I might say a different answer. Because it does coincide with the chapter in my book, but it's true. People undervalue, like, you cannot out supplement, out diet, out exercise, out therapy, not getting sleep. So the myth that hustle is the answer to everything, and, you know, money and hustle and, you know, hustle and grind. People think they can end up taking a pill or getting a surgery or doing something to counteract that, where they don't understand sleep is probably the most important thing on everything. Like, sleep matters more than what you eat. Sleep matters more than what therapies you do. Sleep matters more than a medication. Sleep matters more than a vitamin. It just doesn't matter. There comes a point. I don't know if that's necessarily a myth, but that would be, so if I had to say myth, I would just go with cholesterol probably. Thoughts on cholesterol and saturated fat being bad for you, and that causes heart disease and other things. That's probably one of the biggest myths out there in Western medicine, and it leads to an outrageous overprescription of statin medications. Mm-hmm. So I think as far as a myth, that's a lie. It's actually a lie. It's not even a myth. It's a bold-faced Western medicine, pharmaceutical-driven lie that cholesterol has anything to do with cardiovascular disease and a statin drug should be used to treat it. That's a lie. Ansel Keys manipulated his studies and he lied. And all of medicine is based on that one big problem. Another huge myth is that people think mental stuff. So I will say mental health. I wasn't voted the chiropractor that's best in mental health. I was voted the best mental health practice in Atlanta over psychiatrists, over the Amen Clinic, I was the only chiropractor in the category. So I have a very root cause, holistic way of looking at it. And in psychiatric health, mental health, there's a myth that all of these things are related to neurotransmitter deficiencies and deficits. That's actually a theory. It is not proven. And it's a big myth. There is no evidence of that, actually. Now, we know those things are the molecules of emotion. We know there's things that we have to optimize around it. But the idea that the psychiatric hold on Western medicine of, I can listen to some symptoms, I don't have to take any lab tests, and I don't have to do any brain imaging, and yet I can treat that organ called your brain with zero labs and zero brain images, any other medical profession would be, they would lose their license for malpractice without taking labs or doing imaging before they treated you. Yet for some reason, we're allowed to do that in psychiatry. So I think there are many myths with that. I don't know if those are the two biggest ones. I don't know if you want me to get started on vaccines. That's a whole nother story and a rabbit hole. We would get banned, so let's not do it. You'll get censored, unfortunately.
So let's go back to the mental health piece. I have a father who passed away 10 years ago, but I watched him spend his life struggling with bipolar disorder. And what I saw on my end of the equation is you medicate till they're numb.
Yeah.
You medicate till they're numb.
Till they're gone, often. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not even numbness, right? And we're not saying there aren't real things here. I get it, you know, but what you're seeing a lot of is often misdiagnosis. They're calling an umbrella of symptoms bipolar, right? And if you don't realize, that could simply be a B6 and zinc deficiency that's caused from an inflammatory disorder. And if you go root cause and look at what's actually going on and look at some genetics and look at the epigenetic impact, look at what they're eating, look at if they had an infection, look at what happened to them. Is this post-strep infection? Is this post-brain trauma? You know, it doesn't mean you just sprinkle on a bunch of, you know, stuff. It's like psychiatric medication can have a place. There are a few that I like that, you know, patients will come in a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I'm like, I like lithium, you know, and that might be odd for some people to hear, but there are some real complicated issues that can happen, you know, such as schizophrenia. And that is one that, but lithium is found in nature. Lithium exists. Lithium is in food. There are three forms of it. So I always start with the supplement form. I have tons of my patients on lithium orotate. It has powerful, magnificent effects. So if I can have somebody with comes in with schizophrenia on 7 medications and I get them down to lithium, you know, and a handful of supplements, and they're no longer actually schizophrenic and they can get a job or go to college, we're winning. We're really, really winning. So I'm not anti-medication. If needed, things happen. I've had people, you know, severe brain trauma. They have brain damage. They're covered in tight. Their whole body's been reconstructed. They, you know, hit a telephone pole and were dead, actually. Well, we've got brain trauma, and we're going to do neural feedback, and we're going to use light therapy. We're going to do all this stuff to try to repair the tissue that's there, so it'll have neuroplastic changes. But hey, we might have to have some things. I want people to understand that your thyroid comes out, we need to give you hormones, you know, like there's things we have to do, but there's a lot of bad diagnosing going on that is more of a concern for me. So what your father was dealing with, and bipolar can be really stabilized. I mean, you can get that very balanced, and you might have some reason that there's a medication being used to help modulate something in the system, but it's usually inflammation based.
So, you know, you talk about that and you talk about brain health. And then you said earlier that the number one thing that we could impact our health with most was rest. And that is probably, true confession, been my biggest struggle the last 15 years is sleep. And what just blew me away when I was, for people that haven't been to your website, they need to get there, because what blew me away, even in your store, I mean, I thought I was pretty educated and I saw stuff that I'd never seen. I saw what you use under your bed every night to help with the brain waves. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away because this was non-medication.
Yeah. It's amazing the advances in technology that we have available to us at our fingertips that are suppressed. And actually, I have a lot more devices that I can't legally put, that I use and sell to my patients, that I can't legally put on my website because of the good old FDA. the racketeering pharma drug cartel that is the FDA, that controls what gets passed based upon how much money gets passed between people. It's not in the best interest. So I have I have one that costs $200 that runs 27 volts of DC current into my arteries here. And by doing that, it electrocutes all pathogens running across my bloodstream. So it disables all viruses, bacteria, parasites, anything, kills them, bolsters my immune system. DC current causes regeneration. That's how everything heals in the body. If you cut yourself, your cells create DC current to cause electrical activity, electromagnetic pulsation to heal. I can put that thing on the device. It's $200-$250. The FDA approved version is $800.
Wow.
You see the difference?
I do.
Wow. So I can't put that publicly anywhere. I can't say its name anywhere. People have seen me wearing this device. I used to wear two of them. It got me through massive regeneration and healing my body. Best money I ever spent. I have some devices that are $200. Some devices can be $40,000. Some devices are $700, right? Yeah, there's tons of amazing stuff out there that insurance doesn't pay for. Doctors like me know about it. We make a little bit of money by selling them, but it's not, you know, these are $700 device. You think I'm buying a Mercedes with a $700 device? I'm not, right? But I would sure do that with a $70,000 surgery, right?
Absolutely.
Just saying. So yeah, there's a lot of electromagnetic medicine. I'm very into electromagnetic medicine, neurofeedback. I'm a board certified neurofeedback therapist as well. So I became a chiropractor and then I became a board certified neurofeedback therapist. And that is recording brain activity and putting it into brain maps, taking brain imaging, looking at electrical activity, recording it, seeing what those patterns of those brain waves, where they are all over the brain, and certain patterns mean certain things. ADHD looks like this, anxiety looks like this, you know, autism looks like a whole bunch of things, you know, but you have an idea, oh, that's what this is. Depression looks like this, metabolic issues, that looks like a thyroid disorder, I need some labs on that. So by looking at it, you can go, you don't have ADHD, but I know you have an intention. I'm like, what's going on? Then you look like you have a metabolic disorder. Do you have thyroid labs? So instead of putting you on a stimulant, why don't we fix your thyroid? Right? So it lets you look and differentiate and help patients. Sometimes we're doing brain therapy based on that electrical activity, and sometimes we're not. Well, looking and recording electrical activity and looking at electromagnetic pulsing and looking at doing biofeedback on heart rhythm as well, you got to eventually be like, all right, we're electrical and we're magnetic and I understand it. And you're just kind of over the years putting two and two together. One of the therapies I do, the whole purpose of something called deep states or alpha theta therapy is to drive their brain so deep into an alpha theta meditative, deep hypnagogic state, deeper than hypnosis. I'm taking them so far down that they're still awake. You know, when you fall asleep, speaking of sleep, your brain should slow itself down. But you know, we have like gears, right? If you ever drove a stick, I drove stick shift. First gear, second gear, third gear, fourth gear, fifth gear, right? And then neutral. Neutral just is neutral. Most Americans don't even know what neutral is. I describe neutral, they're like, I don't think I've ever been there. I'm like, you probably haven't, pumpkin. That's called alpha. You probably don't know what I'm talking about. You don't even know what to be still is like and to have no thoughts. You just don't know what that is. So we take them right before you fall asleep. You know how you're like, you'll be in bed and you're like this. Oh, I forgot. I didn't turn off the lights. Right. I left the stove on. Right. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Absolutely. That's this alpha theta moment. And memory recall is super high there. You're falling asleep and then there's a spike to wake you back up. And memory call is amazing. If you don't kind of get up and go do the thing you think to do and you go, oh, da da da. Oh, I forgot to do da da da. And you fall back asleep. When you wake up, you're going to be like, what was that thing? Ah, what was it? But if you get up and go do it, then you've got the task done. Well, that space normally lasts 1 to 2 minutes. In neurofeedback, you hold them in that state for like 30 minutes. That's the normal session. I've done it up to 2-3 hours on people. And we do like peak performers. If I do military guys, we take them a really long time. So you go down into this space where it's like this bizarre space you're not normally in for very long, where memory recall is through the roof. So they go down into their unconscious and they find things that they need to heal and repair. And it allows you to go down and deal with things, deep traumas and all kinds of stuff that you normally are too afraid to handle and you can handle it because your unconscious will only take you where it's safe for you. You'll never do anything. You're in charge. So anyway, we get people there. in this amazing space, and then we bring them out. You do that over and over again, and the healing that can happen because we clear out trauma and we get them into this space to like, I don't normally go there. I'm like, I know. But once we do that over and over again, let me explain to you how good their meditation gets. Now I can give somebody like meditation results in 3 months. That'll take them 3 years because we drive their brain into being able to do it finally, right? So the sleep, you know, some people can't sleep because they can't shift those gears at all. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because you've got to be in not only fifth gear all day at work, right? You got to be in sixth and seventh gear. You got to create new gears because now you're supposed to work like this. You're supposed to have a phone, this screen, that screen, 14 people. Oh, what? Oh, hang on, blah, 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 blah. You're supposed to be talking on here while you're trading cryptocurrency, while you're reading a spreadsheet.
It's just my world.
Right? That's literally what we're expecting people to do. Yeah. And then suddenly go, oh, I got to go to bed now. Doesn't work. So because of all this electromagnetic influence that we're dealing with, I try to leverage technology and electromagnetic stuff to counteract the technology. It's kind of an oxymoron or whatever, but hey, you know, it's where we're at. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff available when you look at that. So anyway, that deep state, well, the whole point I said all that, I'm very verbose. Hang with me. I can circle back, huh? Is... The deep state is I'm trying to make their brainwave frequency be exactly the same frequency as the Earth.
I read that on your site.
Right. The Schumann resonance, right? So by doing that, you're like, huh, okay. And I had to go, why am I doing this? Like, what does the Earth do? And then you realize the Earth is entraining brains to be calm, to be stable, to have super memory, to have super creativity. The Earth entrains, meaning it pushes and naturally drives the human brain to be like an open vessel of information and flow. That's what the Earth does. But the reality is, how many people actually touch the Earth and how often do they do it?
So what you're saying is that why when we go on vacation and I'm sitting in front of the ocean or I'm hiking in the mountains, I have so much peace and so much rest and so much creativity for that week.
Yes. And brain studies actually prove it. University of Michigan actually hooked people up to EEGs, same thing I do, and looked at their brain activity and said, let's put up, you know, you can get a college student, do anything for $25 and a 6-pack of beer, right? So you take them in the library and you take them into the forest and brain activity is completely different. So even they weren't barefoot and hugging the trees. They weren't even deeply touching and connected to the earth. But being in the environment, there's a lot to be said for the type of electrons that are flowing in at the beach. There's a lot of negative, you know, antioxidants you're basically getting. So sitting at this computer right now, I'm getting things called cations, and they're damaging me. They're oxidating me. They're aging me. The oceans, waterfalls, thunderstorms, you know how clean it smells, right? In those, when that happens, because all of these other things, these ions, these negative things called, they're antioxidants. They heal and cleanse you. They clean. That's why it smells so good. They make you feel better. They're literally like antioxidants and they're free. They come from the earth. So yes, but just seeing nature. So even offices that have windows that see trees, those workers are more productive than people who are in square cubicles. Even if you're in a square cubicle and you put up a photo, a poster of a bamboo forest or an ocean, your brain is going to work better because your brain actually doesn't know that's a poster. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Wow. Okay. Wow. And so Absolutely. Many of the solutions are available free from the yes. earth.
Nature that's is amazing. There. That's what I tell people. Most of the stuff I tell people, most of the stuff is free. Now, again, if you have you work a 12-hour shift in an office, I get it. You're like, how am I supposed to get outside? Well, take breaks as much as possible to go outside. If you have a choice of if your lunch could be in a cafeteria or it could be sitting outside in the park bench, do it outside. Can you, every hour, is it a big deal to stretch and do a quick walk? And literally 30 seconds, let your face and your eyes see the sunlight because it tells the brain what time of the day it is. Because it's very confused by artificial lighting and stuff. It doesn't understand it. You know, it doesn't understand constant air conditioning and constant heat. It knows it's like, it's winter. It's supposed to be cold. Why is it 70 in this house? it's a confusing, it's a, the body is like, I don't get the world right now. But going outside, I go outside barefoot every single morning, step on my grass and look at the sun every morning. I mean, it takes a lot for that, in the rain, in the snow. So sometimes it might be 30 seconds. Sometimes it's going to be 3 hours, right? But it's free, right? Taking, you know, so I'm a big fan of don't wear shoes, be barefoot, touch the earth. When I fly, I make a big deal of when I fly, find when I get off and I get to something, if there's like, you know how they have like a tree and it's like a little surrounding of stuff and there's like dirt right there. I touch the tree and I touch the dirt and I make this moment of trying to reconnect my body to the earth because it's extremely unnatural for it to have just done what it did. Right. And it's very disoriented. Yeah. So yeah, most of there's, you know, nature and being in it and laying on the grass. You guys are old enough like me. Okay. I'm almost 50. Remember when we used to like lay in the grass and just look at clouds?
Right.
Yeah.
This was like, everybody did it. And you could be with your friends for hours, actually. And what is, oh, it's a dragon.
Right.
So, right, what they're practicing is tremendous. So they're getting trained by the earth. That Schumann resonance is putting them into 7.83 hertz. It's actually creating lots of alpha, lots of neutral, this and that. And that little bit of thinking is kind of like theta daydreaming, you know, and it's letting creativity in the mind wander and create, go where it wants to go. And there's so much to be said for the lack of daydreaming and non-productive time. You actually are smarter and more productive if you allow yourself to do that. That the brain studies prove it versus constantly being in fifth gear, which is what society is always telling us to do, is to work harder and solve problems outside here. Don't go inside of yourself. Don't look inside and think you don't have answers inside. And inside are these other slow brain waves where meditation encourages and daydreaming encourages. We actually chastise children. Oh, he's always off in his own world in the classroom. He's not listening to the teacher. He's off. And most of those kids tell me, like, yeah, because like what's in my mind is so much more interesting than what they're talking about. These kids are often writing novels. If you look at what they produce, it's so much more important than, seriously, that history is not even real anyway. And that's what they're wasting your time making them memorize.
It's not.
Right? This kid's got genius ideas. You give them what they're interested in. You're like, I remember this one kid who was adorable. Mom was so worried about, oh, he does the poetry. This, and I had him do some things. I had a lot of puzzles in the office and their brain things. And he could do things, he was like 7 or something, that no adults could do. And I'm like, okay, could you do me a favor, build this thing? And he did it and we came back. And I said, looked at her, I said, that is a potential, he's gonna be like a great physicist, engineer, architect or something. Who gives a crap if he doesn't do poetry? That's not his genius. He's like crazy brilliant. I don't know what that is. And most of us can't understand what that brain just did. He's got this super powerful ability to do what he's genius at. Don't break it. Glorify right. it. Help well, him do that. But that's not what school does.
No. Correct. The traditional educational system is creating robots.
Yes. Because robots are good workers.
Mm-hmm.
Robots don't question. Robots are always focused outside of themselves in that brainwave called beta. They're busy. They make more beta, like a little hamster in a wheel. And then that makes you really anxious and it makes you not be able to sleep. So then you don't perform well. So then you're even more anxious. So then you must go to a doctor and get some drugs to help with this, right? Which end up making you more anxious and making you not be able to sleep and make you zombied out, make you numb. Because at this point, now you're just a slave to the system, which is a rigged debt system, a factory. Schools are designed to make factory workers. They're not designed to make it creative inventors or resistors, right?
I see the same thing in leadership. I see the same thing. They think that coaching is telling people what to do. No, it's not. That's just more factory workers. Real coaching is helping people discover the answers that are within themselves by asking good questions, not by giving the answers.
Yeah. Well, and that's hard for us to go inside, right? If you've been trained your whole life not to.
Well, and by listening. And I just wanted to bring that up because one of the gifts that you have that you do so beautifully is like Jeannie said, you ask really amazing interactive questions, and then you deeply listen. And that's what I think people really need to do more of.
Yeah. And I'll say, I mean, can we just say anything?
Yes. Say anything.
You're free.
Okay. And so the majority of community, so listening, you know, Jill, I appreciate that. And I think that's what I've done more than anything, is I've cared enough to learn to listen. And my listening isn't just in words. What you say is just a part of it, you know? So I am listening to a lot of information coming into me. I've basically, a brain to me is just an antenna. So my nervous system is just an antenna. I'm a very big field. And how strong can I make this antenna to pick up information? I get that from all types of signals I'm getting from the person. I always prefer, I don't like phone consults or anything like that. Like I need to see a person, because the nonverbal communication, emotional cues I'm picking up are way more powerful than the words. The words do matter. The word choice matters. The intonation, the inflection. I'm listening to all of those things. But what you're doing is matching that up to what you're seeing. And what masks are doing an absolute destruction of normal communication and people being able to listen to anything. So they can't listen to over there. So then they're getting bad information. So then they have to think about, well, I got to make a decision on bad information, how good of a choice they're going to make. So then they put out a response to what they heard, which whatever, you're missing most of the communication. If I can't see this part of you, you know, and this is how we're talking, I miss too much information. I can't, I'm like, yeah, that's not going for me. I'm going to need more data on what's going on, because my brain, without me thinking about it, is assessing tons of things. It's feeling all the frequencies. It's I'm downloading so much stuff about that person, and I'm making decisions without even realizing it in nanoseconds. Are they telling the truth? Is this congruent? What's off about this picture? You know, my empathy and my compassion are coming in from all of that. And if I can't see it, I can't hear, basically. You know what I mean? And I'm not talking about just words. Talking about listening to them as a frequency being. And that's part of, I think, the desensitization and keeping people more disconnected, not only from themselves, but now other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we come back, we're going to take a commercial break now for 1 minute, but when we come back, I want to talk about how we can counteract that desensitization and reclaim our connection. So we're going to take a commercial break real quick, and we will be back in just over 1 minute.
Are you ready to be ageless and live limitless? Unlock your codes of longevity and discover how to age in reverse, look and feel years younger, perform at your peak, and express boundless energy, vitality, and joy. This and so much more is possible, because it's no longer a question of if we're living longer. We are living longer. The question is, how well do you want to live, beginning today, so that you can flourish and thrive at any age and any stage of life? This book brings together more than 20 of today's health and longevity leaders to share with you the secrets that exist within, so that you truly can unlock your code and you can live your long life well, beginning today. So now is your time to go to codesoflongevity.com to order your copy, so that you truly can look, feel, and live life optimized to 120 and beyond.
All right. We are back with Dr. Stephanie Rimka, whose chapter in Codes of Longevity I've obliterated, as well as buying on all her website, because there's so much there. So before our commercial, we were talking about how with masks, with the COVID-19, the pandemic, everything that's going on, we've lost an essence of true communication and connection. How do you think we can reclaim that?
Well, it starts with a big question, I think. And it comes down to remembering, or even asking, right? What does it mean to be human? And for me, I'm all about, well, to resource humanity, you need to know what it means to be human. And I think the further we get into a technological hole, we're forgetting what it means to be human. and therefore it's easy to forget our humanity. So that's the first question I think people need to say, like, wait a minute, you know, what does it mean to be human? What did humans 40,000 years ago do? How did they move? How did they think? How did they work? How did they eat? You know, how did they breathe? How did they sleep? Right. And when you do that, you'll start to see how disconnected it is today. And what they all had in common was this deep connection to nature, right? Nature, you can try to break any law around, but the laws of nature are going to come back and beat you every time. We see that anytime there's like a tsunami or something, we're like, well, clearly, I don't care what kind of city you try to build. If that happens, it's done, right? What are you going to do? Right? We are not more powerful than that. And the more we get further away from that, the worse off we're going to be, because the brain is getting hijacked and it's hard to make good decisions. So one, I would, you know, look to nature, right? Look to sometimes people might need to study animals. They might need to watch it like a National Geographic. Like, what does an animal in nature do, right? Look at what some of our other mammals are doing and how they honor the seasons. How do they eat in the different seasons? How do they deal with the weather? And so for humans, that means you need to get outside. You need to breathe fresh air. You need sunlight. You need clean environments. Like when you go to the beach or when you go on a hike or a waterfall, you feel different. You feel better. So that's like a place to start. But also then what it means to be human is we are social pack animals. We don't do well in isolation. If you were an outcast in a tribal community, it almost it surely meant death. You weren't going to survive. We are a very weak animal by ourselves, right? Look at us. I don't have fur. I don't have a lot of muscles. The best thing about us is the big thing is our brain, but it makes us very weak in many ways. But we have special shoulders. We learn how to throw a spear. We have brains. We learn how to work together in a community to say, what? We can just dig a hole and like kill a whole bunch of bison at once, right? Can't we just do that? And that's what we did. We're real smart. We got real smart, okay? But we have to be in community, and we have to have, and that meant, you know, it was about 150, 200 at the most in like kind of a tribe. That was a perfect kind of community number. And we were all up in each other's grill. You know, we touched each other all the time. We hugged each other all the times. Babies were never on the ground. Babies were always on a woman somewhere. You know, to look at each other, to touch each other, to be with each other in nature. These are critical components. Isolation and disconnection from nature will surely kill a human's ability to go into humanity, to have compassion and empathy. And that's a real problem, because then you make worse and worse choices, right? So I think that's the biggest place. I need to be doing more of this. I don't love it on a screen, but even face screening with people where you can see their face is better than just typing and Facebooking and Twittering and twatting and whatever, all those TikToking and, right? Like,
right.
Real reaction with people. But going back into, you know, look at people, hug people, kiss people. You know, I mean, I know this is where we're at, but some of this nonsense at times, I'm like, you know what? I'm a mom. Do you guys have kids? Does
anybody? I don't, but I have pets. Okay, and I have nieces and nephews.
I have a pet too. And if he was out here, I mean, my dog kisses me on the lips all the time. I'm like, oh God, that really, Axel with the tongue on the face, right? I mean, come on, you know, it happens. Well, I'm a mom. My son's 15 now. And I'll tell you right now, I can't tell you how many times I've been puked on, pooped on. I think I was vomited on probably once, sneezed on, snotted on, blah, 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 blah. Doesn't matter. My son would get sick. It is what it is. I mean, all up in the face, hugging and kissing and all the things. Oh, pumpkin baby's okay. Fever is okay. Vomit. Oh, there's more vomit. Okay. I never got sick. Ever.
You know,
no mother is afraid to take care of her feverish, sick child.
Right.
Unless something's wrong with her. Right. You understand? It's like, what are you talking about? I don't care what it is. I'm going to handle it. I'm protected. I'm fine. Why do you think Mother Teresa could go into every leper colony on earth and never get leprosy? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just sometimes I'm just, what they're trying to do to make people afraid of their children is like, are we lost it? kids get strep and fever and chicken pox and things. I mean, and what? I could not sleep for 3 nights in a row taking care of a sick, feverish child, and I'm fine. I'll sleep and I'll get better. I hate to tell you, but there's just, I have an immune system, right? But there's a disconnect of like, what? We take care of each other when we're sick. That's what we do. We are pack animals. It is built into us to protect and defend our own. Like animalistic, right? Animalistic ways of being biology has. That's my chromosomes, and I will kill you if you try to threaten me around this. You know what I mean? This is just how it is.
Absolutely.
Right? And so there's like how to stop some of that desensitization. Like go outside, do some breathing, try to calm it down, and call your mom.
And hug your family and your
pet. Yeah, hug your kids and hug. Hugs release oxytocin. You need to, hug. Make it last 2 minutes. Release some hormones that help the system. You know, the number one, so here's the thing. The number one emotion that suppresses your immune system, do you know what it is?
What? Fear?
Close. Fear is bad. Shame is the worst.
Oh, shame. Oh,
really?
Girl, don't get me started.
And what has been happening?
That right now.
What has been so shame is intimately connected to autoimmune disorders. We know a lot about what happened with people's childhood and what if traumas that have happened and shaming and always connected to some autoimmune disorders that have gone on later in life. But we know with studies what it does to the immunoglobulins with your immune system. It's 6-hour depression at minimum, really, really bad. Well, the antidote to that is compassion. Mm-hmm. So if you can flood yourself with something that brings up compassion, well, what brings up more compassion than looking at your children and hugging them for 2-3 minutes? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But no, compassion, having your kids spend time with their grandmother, huh? That's healing. That boosts an immune system more than any supplement out there.
And I took my mother out of a facility several months ago at Thanksgiving. And instead of a weekend, I had her for weeks and I had her grandchildren around and we're about to do that again. And they say, well, you need this rules and this. I don't care. I'm going to break her free and we're going to have family time.
That's the most important thing for her. My mom is 75. When all of a sudden I'm like, oh my, come down to this and all the things and all people are like, worried about what? Yeah, I'm worried she wouldn't get to hug her grandson. Has everybody lost it? She's in the last quarter of her life. When you hit 75, y'all, you don't have that much longer to go to begin with. That is the end stage. But let's just tell the truth. Like we don't all, the truth, we're going to die. Everybody's going to die. And between 75 and 100, most likely you're going to die. Now, we're working on in codes of longevity and all the biohacking and all those devices that you're like, oh my God, what are all these things she's got? All of those things, these devices, the electromagnetics, the lights, we use electricity, we use magnetism, we use lights, most important stuff, because we're creating electrical current pulse. You're pronounced dead because brain dead means there's no electricity left in you. Life force is electricity, okay? So once that spark is gone, right? You're dead, supposedly. Spark goes somewhere. That's up for debate where, but energy can neither be created nor destroyed. It's always there. So I don't know where it goes, right? But you don't disappear. You might not see you. Okay, that's another thing. So that life force, I'm like, it's last 25 years or so. Do you think I want my mom's? Do you think she doesn't want her last years lived in total fear and disconnection and no love? I mean, she lived her life to see her children and her grandchildren, her legacy, and to love them and hug them and kiss them. And she still calls my son her sweet pea. You know, she's the, oh, my sweet pea. I mean, and he's still cuddly with her. Come on, grandma. And hugs and kisses. You know what I mean? Like, that's gold. That's gold and that's gold and that's gold. And the reality is, at that age, yeah, I don't want her to get a flu. I don't want her to get any damn thing. And I'm going to be crying and all sad whenever. And I hope it happens 20 years from now, right?
Right.
Let's tell the truth. This is the end stage. You know, my grandmother died at 96 or 98 or something like that. I wasn't sad. I was sad for my mother, to watch my mother lose her mother. But, so she was crying and sad, but we're like, how much older was she supposed to live? You know what I mean? Like, she's 98. I mean, she's
pretty good.
That's a good life. It was just old age and time to go and whatever, you know, a few years ago. But I've had some, you know what I mean? Like, we have such a fear of death. We've been, it's not really a rest sleep issue, but it's kind of a sanitization. It's a disconnection from nature, right? Tribal cultures, everybody was around for a birth. Everybody was around for a death. Everybody knew what these things were. They're dirty. They're messy. Birth and death are ugly and messy, but it's a part of the circle of life. It's normal. And they're revered, sacred parts of who we are. But Western culture wants to make birth be an invisible thing over here and sterile medical procedure and nobody should be around and don't touch her and da, da, da. And death is the same way. And it gets pushed away and it becomes invisible. And it's like, we're very disconnected from our own humanity because we don't understand how it's a circle and how these things are intimately related. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And if we use death in the right way, it actually can be a time of spiritual growth.
I've heard, absolutely. I mean, obviously the person who dies, it is spiritual growth. I mean, they are transmuting and transforming into up-leveling, right? I have never, I know, you know, you deal with hospice, and I have never been present when a human has left their body. I've never had that experience. But I know lots of people who have, like my mother, she was with her mother. I have many people that were with their parents in hospice and in that moment. And every single one, without exception, privately, the way they all say it was the most powerful, sacred experience of their lives. Every single one of them, like, I can't describe it. Like, it was such a gift.
It's changed me forever.
Yeah.
It changed me forever for the good. And it made me explore things on a much more deeper level. But I'm telling you, it's also taught me life is much more simple than I've made it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Doesn't have to be so complicated. Simple isn't always easy, though. It's easier to keep it complicated because then we can hide.
Yeah. Simple. It's all about coming back to simple. I think sometimes people don't want to do some of the things I say because they're simple. So I can say the same things to people at a cocktail party because I get pumped for like free healthcare all the time. Everywhere I go, oh, can I ask you? Sure, go ahead. I can say the same thing. I can give them $5,000 advice. They won't go home and do it. They come into the office and they pay me $5,000 and I tell them to do the same thing. Now they value it because they've given me an exchange. Now I have a harder time convincing them to do it. Like Jill, like you said, these things are free. I know, you know, but it does require changing behavior, right? So perceptions create our behaviors. So perceptions are based on the information, the lies or the myths that are coming in, right? So I have to do a lot of things to break up myths with new, I have to do lots of education often to get them to be like, and it might take 6 months or a year and they go, oh, Dr. Rimka, now I understand why it's important. Now I'll do it. I'm like, well, you wasted 10 months. You could have just done it. And we would have lost the 30 pounds by now or been rid of the Lyme disease or whatever. But I'm like, but they so are used to saying, here's my, and I mean, I charge for it, but they'd rather give me, I could say, all right, I can sell you a $5,000 neurofeedback package. And you've got to come in here 3 times a week for 3 months and blah, blah, blah. And you buy these little devices. Okay. Versus I can tell you the top 5 things to do, and it's going to be about prioritizing your sleep. And these are the behaviors you're going to have to do. You're going to have to change all the light bulbs in your house, turn all the lights off when the sun goes down, and not be on any iPads, computers, no electronics after that. Turn off the Wi-Fi. And they're like, oh, well, I can't not watch Netflix in bed, you know, or, oh, I can't stop drinking wine. You know, oh, I can't. I'm like, oh, really? So they'd much rather say, well, can't you just like hook me up to the machines and just do it? I'm like, well, I guess. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
but I mean, you still need to do those. Like I said, you can't out therapy, out supplement, out exercise, out diet, out whatever, trying to survive on 4 hours of sleep, you know, or never slowing down. Like you can't do it. You are paying a price and it will catch up to you.
So right? if you're dealing with busy executives and they're having challenges with their sleep, what are 2 pieces? Because I'm going to go through 3 areas with you. First, the busy executive that needs to improve their sleep patterns. What were 2 things you tell them to do immediately?
Well, I would light management and bed and sleep temperature.
Okay.
So if I know nothing else, probably, well, there's three. Can I say three?
Yes, absolutely.
How you start your day determines how you're going to end your day. Ooh. So one, yeah,
that's the powerful. Light.
So it's the circadian rhythm that's the problem. Now, sleep disorders can be incredibly complex and they can take a lot of nuance and finesse to regulate, right? And there's a lot of tools we have. But for that person starting, step one, if they're having trouble sleeping, you need to see the morning sunlight. That's the first thing. I'm like, with no contacts and no glasses and no window, I need you to be in there. At least give me 1 minute. I need the brain to say, oh, it's morning. Okay, I know what time of day it is. There's a 24-hour clock that's being controlled, the eye and the brain, telling everything when to work. What's happening is the brain thinks it's morning right now. My lights are actually very special, so it doesn't think that. And if I put that, I should be doing this. Normally at night, I'm always like this. So what I'm doing here with the blue blocking glasses on, it's making it simulating like I'm only seeing fire. We've had an adaptation since we learned how to use fire. The eyes are okay to see fire at night. The other light bulbs are telling my brain, it's noon. It's noon. So if my brain says, well, it's noon, we don't release melatonin. We don't slow down. We don't get ready to go to bed. So in the morning, you see the sun that creates melatonin in the eyes. It's setting up you later at night to go to bed.
That's brilliant. And it's simple.
So simple.
And those glasses are in my Stephanie Rimka cart right now.
Awesome. I have like 3-4 brands on my website. Pick any of them. These are the EMR Tech. I have like 5 pair. I bought them for every one of my patients in practice. The kids would always, if you're going to watch TV after the sun goes down, you have to wear glasses. Period. You don't like how it looks orange, don't watch it. That was my rule. Period. So one, morning sunlight. Two, light management at night. Follow nature. When that sun goes down, that means you're only supposed to be seeing fire.
Okay.
So use candles, a fireplace, crystals in your crystal salt lamps, whatever, things that have and or get this. So I don't have any LED or halogen bulbs in my home. Everything's incandescent. I have red bulbs all over the place. So I have day bulbs and I have night bulbs, but that's complicated. Get some glasses, turn off the lights. If you could just go to bed, if you could, you know, you can use a red bulb or glasses and you can read and chill out. Okay. Light, that's a huge issue. So I hope you understand why. Because if my brain thinks I'm seeing the sunlight and the light bulbs, it doesn't want to.
Totally.
When you turn the lights off, it's like, but it's noon.
The whole purpose of the glasses is to stop confusing your brain.
Yes. It's to simulate fire. It allows me to keep light on in this. So these EMR techs also block green, and I can't drive in these. You can't see the green light. So you can't drive in these. I love how they look. So I use them at home. So my other ones on there, the Raw Optics or the Blue Blocks, you can drive in those. So I would pay attention to blue light at night. You can put F.lux on your computer screens to change the screens if you have to be on them, but I would prefer you live like the Hudza or any other primal tribe, and when the sun goes down, all the electronics turn off. Put some candles on, play Monopoly with your kids, play charades, go old school. Okay. Have a bonfire in your backyard. I don't care, but right. Fire. You're okay with red and orange light because it's like fire. All right. Fire is better than the bulbs. And then number three, sleep in a colder room. So you want it to be 65 degrees if you can do that. If not, that's why I sell things like the chili pad. You can make it. They're on every bed in my house. We put it at 55 degrees to keep you colder. You will sleep much deeper in a cold environment because the sun is supposed to go down at night and it gets colder. That's what's supposed to happen. But if you keep a constant temperature in your house, you literally have no signals. So you see how you're getting a mismatch from nature? The temperature doesn't change. The light doesn't change. You're so confused. The brain is like, I don't know what time it is. I can't figure this out. It's like noon all the time. We don't sleep at noon. You understand?
Right.
Right.
That would be how I'd start.
We'll talk, you and I will be talking more offline at another point, because on brainandbodysolutions.com, I saw some other stuff under my mattress that I'll be chatting with you more about later.
Yeah, I love that device.
End up in Atlanta before it's all over. But that's the sleep piece. Now I'm going to ask you another one, knowing that there's so many unique nuances and you are an expert at working with people and their special things. I have several friends that have children on the spectrum, you know, that are struggling with some form of autism at varying levels. And with, I know this is, each one is unique and each one has very unique things, but if you could give a struggling mom or somebody who's trying to make sure that she does the best for her child some tips and advice, what would a couple of them be?
Obviously, you know, that's why I do what I do. My nephew is autistic. Big one. Absolutely. Well, is the tips for the kid or for her?
Either way, tell me what's best. I'm thinking more for her.
Yeah, which is good. I went right to the kid, but I mean this. So mom, you know, you have to remember oxygen mask first. Like if we, I have somebody here, but no, I can, we're good. So first thing, like if you're on a plane, we all know this, right? Mm-hmm. If something happens, I have got to put that oxygen mask on myself to save my child. So you've got to let go of that. If that's the thing, you have to say, oh, right, Dr. Ingram, oxygen mask. If I go down, my kid is going down. So I best not go down, mm-hmm. right? I have to prioritize myself, my health, and my ability to stay strong, protecting, and making good decisions. Because the mother, typically 90% of the time is holding the tone in that family, that special needs in every family, but really special needs family in particular, as the mama goes, so goes the whole house. So if she's stressed out, exhausted, can't get it together, the kid absorbs all of it. They're pure empaths and they're just going to display it as all kinds of ways, whatever. But they're feeling it now again. And it's not your fault, mama. Mama got to take care of herself. So that any guilt nonsense that we've picked up, you got to have a ceremonial burning party. I don't care what you got to do. Make a bonfire, write a letter to yourself, rip it apart, burn it, ceremony, dance naked. I don't care. Mama, oxygen mask on yourself is critical. So, I mean, I have patients that would only get a pedicure one time a year. They're coming in, they're spending like 50 grand a year trying to help the kid. 50 grand, I mean, a lot of money it costs to do this. They're spending insane money. She would get one pedicure a year. I said, what? She goes, oh, it's like my favorite thing. I said, why? On Mother's Day. And she goes, I said, you only get one pedicure a year. And they're spending like 100 grand on the kid's education. I'm like, oh, no, that's got to stop. We got to go once a quarter at least. Personally, I think you need to get a massage every week. Right? So you got to do what the budget can afford, but she has to take care of herself. She has to make her rest a priority. And if rest, the only thing she can do, she's like, look, I don't have any money. I'm like, I got it. All the money's going to therapy. Can you spend 15 minutes being quiet outside? She said, what? I said, can you spend 15 minutes sitting in a chair, listening to the birds, literally doing nothing? Don't make a list. Don't do anything. Do nothing. You know what I mean? So part of what the parents would do in the office, right? I'm doing therapy 2-3 times a week on their kids. The whole way we would set it up is that mom comes in. Your job is done now, mom. See you later. Sometimes they would just drop the kids and go shopping, or can I go to the coffee shop? Can I get, you know, we didn't encourage it. The kids knew me so well, it's fine. But we would let them do like free therapy. So you get on the biomat, put on a V light. Like we had special music and lights, all this kind of stuff to like, really, I have to heal her because her energy drives the whole home and the way the kid responds. So step one, she has to prioritize sleep and she needs to start being selfish. I don't consider it selfish, but that might be what she's, oh, right. Like she needs me time and she needs me time every single day. So if her spouse isn't on board, they bring them to me and I get them on board, you know, something like that. But it's really important. And I've had sometimes parents come in, they bring the kid in and I do the brain, and like, I go, here's the thing. I will take care of him. He's autistic. I got it. That's not going anywhere. But you need my help more than he does right now. And they'll start crying. And I'm like, it's kind of the whole thing. I'm like, and they get it and they go home, they tell the husband, and the husband is like basically in love with me. Oh my God, I love somebody. Because usually the husbands are dying for these women to take care of themselves because they miss their wives. Because that mother has become now the special needs caregiver and the warrior, and their relationship suffers. And I'm like, that marriage has to stay together for the benefit of what's going on there, right? Absolutely. So I deal with that. They have to learn that being a martyr is not good. Like that is not that martyrdom crap. I have to deal with that and break that mentality up. I'm like, you're not helping your children by burying yourself. You got to be around a really long time, like a really, really long time, because we don't even know if this kid will ever be able to live alone. So you got to be around a long time. Yeah.
No,
I start with that.
There's so much to what you have to offer. We've got to have you back sometime for two reasons. One, because I think you have so much more to share in autism, in health and fitness. And I've already seen your courses, even money mindset. So I think there's so much dimension. You hit it all emotionally, spiritually, physically. You leave no stone unturned in your practice. And so I'm so thrilled that we had a chance. I feel like we just got started and it's time to end.
Yeah.
But cool. I want to encourage everybody to go to brainandbodysolutions.com. Check her out. She's an anti-bullshit truth teller. And you're going to find that on the website. And you're going to find a whole lot of courses and resources and knowledge. I think you stand for three things. Let me see if I remember. One is trust.
Yeah.
One is health, and one is knowledge, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's a tough thing. So you got to come up with like your personal brand values and your business. So definitely, you know, personal development is a big one. It's hard for me to kind of go through. So trust, truth, health, personal development, and spirituality are the things that drive me. And I, you know, trying to figure out what's the way I blend it, but I can't help but merge them all together. So, you know, I look at a brain map and labs through a spiritual lens. And I look at spirituality through the lens of nature and primal cultures, and trying to bring them all together. And bringing in physics with light, electromagnetism, and quantum relationships of things. So I know it's kind of bizarre, all the things I do, but they all go together. Because to me,
it makes sense. That's
how it all works, right?
In a foundation of connection. You know, connection
everything
to yourself.
Connected. Right. Yes.
It is.
Connection to the earth, connection to the people that you love in your life.
Yeah, and we can have a whole talk on autism about that. And what I feel like I'm basically trying to do is help those souls stay connected to their actual body, because they're very uncomfortable in their body and all the chakra work I have to do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming today. We are going to have to wrap it. We're getting the call to wrap. Stephanie Rimka, you are amazing. You are an amazing, bold-ass truth teller. And
thank you for having me, you guys. It's super fun.
It was so much fun to have you, and we hope to have you back again sometime. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. You are amazing.
Thank you, Jill.